Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Baby, Irachiranga, it has it is a murado. Amazing.
Tall National, live here on Snacky Tunes. Welcome. I'm one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz, sitting in for the illustrious Greg Bresnitz, is the, I guess, also illustrious Jordana Rothman.
I'm a little lustrous today, I'd say. It's a Sunday, but I do what I can.
Do what you can. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, too.
Amazing.
Yes.
why don't you introduce yourself in the band?
Yes, I'm Hamadal.
Yes.
I'm the band leader. We come from Niger. We have on talking drums two people. We have the first one is Mahamadou. Yes. For the second one, we have Omar, the drummer for the group. Yeah. We have on the bass DJ Kubu. DJ Kubu, Yakuba, Mebuza, Food for Bears. Yeah. Yes. We have on the lead, Suleiman Abdou, Suleiman Gouverneur. Yes. We have on the second lead, DJ Massa, Massa Oudou. You see, very crazy.
Hello.
Yeah. And we have a dancer. We bring a dancer. She's Salamatu Damaluga. Machimu.
Amazing. Big Thank family. You. Big crew.
Yeah, big crew. Thank you.
You guys look like you have a good time.
Yeah, thank you.
So much joy in that sound. It's really, you can really feel that, especially the percussion over here.
Percussion, yes.
Really beautiful.
How's it feel to be hanging out here in New York? You having a good time?
Yes, it's very wonderful. We are in New York for maybe a week.
Yeah.
And we was last day on Hudson. It was very amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Very amazing in Hudson. And Marlboro.
In New Jersey.
Yes, in New Jersey, mm-hmm. Yes. It was very, 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 very wonderful. We met very wonderful people in US, and we have around 28 shows around the cities.
Wow.
So,
how have you found the reception here in New York?
Oh, very wonderful. We're very friendly. The people in New York are very friendly for our group. They like our group. They like our group, and they like the performing, because every time when we perform, they dance.
Oh, yeah.
It's important for us.
It's tough not to dance.
Yes.
So tell us how your music got popular and spread from your hometown.
Yes. For the first time, it was very popular in Niger, in Africa, because it's very easy. Our performing is very easy. Our songs are very easy. So in every home, the children can sing our song.
Mm.
So it was very important. And most of the songs are for women. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yes.
Well played.
Woman and love.
Yes.
So it's why our songs are very famous around the world.
Specific women or?
Yeah.
Or just all women in general.
Yeah.
And what is the music scene like in Nigeria? Is it a big community?
Yes, we are. It's just Western and traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in Niger. So, basic on percussions and electric guitar.
Mm.
Yes.
That's what distinguishes the sound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're known for your five-hour sets.
Yes. Every day, we can perform five hours and five times in the week.
The jam band of Niger.
Yeah. And what's it like? What's your favorite part of the five-hour set? Is it the beginning, the end, or where does the energy really hit for you?
About the end.
Yeah?
The end is very crazy sometimes.
And why is that?
Because we give more energy at the end, because we have to leave a good impression for the group.
Wow. And so you said that you have a dancer that travels with you. Is she sort of like your hype woman, like she's there to show the crowd how to dance, especially here in the U.S. while you're touring?
Yes, she's very crazy. The dance is very crazy because it's rock and roll from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
She dances with the body. The dance can be very strong, but in Africa it's very easy. Maybe when you see our sit web, you will see the dancer, and you see the kind of dance Matemo, she's very crazy.
Yeah. Do you think that the crowds here in New York, when you're performing, that they can match her spirit in dancing?
Yes, they can. Yes, they can.
Mm-hmm.
just to 4 or 5 minutes for learning, they can dance with Matiamo.
Easy to sing along, easy to follow in dancing.
Just sing along.
Do you want to play another song?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the name of the song?
The next one, it would be Ambiance.
Okay. Tal National here live on Snacky Tunes. Ta-da.
Allah sonalu walla doka barakan zari zirse Allah.
man.
I immediately want to know what that's about, of course. What's that song about?
It's a song about love.
And yes. And women?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. She would dance for the only the body down. She was dance. She can be down and dance. Very crazy, this dance.
Very crazy.
Yes.
So, your latest album, Connie?
Yes.
How was it recorded? You brought Jamie Carter from Chicago out, right? To Nigeria?
Yes, we just asked him, Jimmy Carter, to come in Niger to record San Nacional for the very first time. He recorded the first album, Anawaya. It's very successful in Niger. Everybody likes this album, and it was like a bomb in Niger because of the song. The first time we get a good song like this one. And then we asked him again to come to Corta Nacional for the second album.
Yeah.
It was Kani. And also, they liked it, and it brings international, very international band. And thanks for Jimmy Carter.
Yes.
How do you... So you're known for these long, extensive... You can play for 5 hours, these long sets. How do you translate that into an album that, you know, that has a limited runtime? How do you find that the spirit of your live work translates to an album?
Like the difference...
Between a recorded song and a live performance. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sometime in the live records, the musician can give... It can be very serious for the musician to give right now what he have in the, mm-hmm. in inside. So when it's maybe the playback recording, it can take a long time for us. Mm. For recording by playback, because we bring him, example, we bring him in Niger, not for the long time, so for the short time. And what the people needs today is live music. We are performing live in Niger, so we have to do it in our recording. Now recording to give maybe 90% of our performing when you hear outside in the recording.
Right.
That's why, everybody likes it, because when you hear the CDs of international music recording international, when you go to the show, they are the same. They're the same music. Yes, there's a difference.
It's the same feeling.
Yes, same feeling, mm-hmm. because the same musicians and the same feeling.
Mm. Have you been able to find good Nigerian food on the road?
Maybe some. Mexican can look like Nigerian food.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, Mexican one.
So what's a classic sort of Nigerian dish, or what's the most famous?
Dodo.
Like a food?
Yeah.
Rice. Rice, very famous in Niger.
How's it prepared?
We cook it with salt for the first time.
Yeah.
Separately. And we cook the sauce and we put it together.
Okay, and what's the sauce like? What's in the sauce?
Tomato sauce and sometimes granite sauce.
Hmm. And you have a lot of like plantains. Like, is it called dodo, the fried plantains?
Plantains, yes. We have it also in Niger, but in Niger we don't have bananas.
Right.
Yes, we bring it from south.
Oh, like
Benin,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ivory Coast, Togo, and other countries near the sea.
Yeah.
So we don't have sea, we have just a river. We have a Niger River, and we have a lot of fish.
A lot of fish.
A lot of fish. River fish.
A lot of fish.
Very delicious.
Do you think that, is your food very, does it have a lot in common with other West African cuisines? Like
Yes, Senegal.
Senegal.
Yes, Senegal, mm-hmm. yes.
There's a very large Senegalese community here in New York, in Harlem, and they have a lot of restaurants up there. Maybe
yes,
you could
we looks about.
You're looking into it.
Yeah,
about Senegal restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, you get on the road and you miss the food at home, right?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, do you want to? I think we have time for another song, and this one could actually be a bit longer if you guys want to go.
Maybe Kani?
Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds good.
You can stretch it for a little bit. You can go the full length. Here we go. Thai National here live on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you all too.
We got some awesome pizza coming for you.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming to Brooklyn.
Thank you.
And good luck on the road. When's the next show?
Next show will be Vermont.
Ooh. You're going to like Vermont.
Okay.
Vermont is very nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And where can people buy the record?
Like what?
Where can people buy the record? Online?
Yes, online, yes.
Fat Cat?
Fat Cat, yes. Fat Cat. Fat Cat is a label for Tam National. We have contracts for 20 years with Fat Cat. And Fat Cat makes Tam National famous in outside in Nigeria. In France, with some radios now play international music like RFE, France yeah. International. They put our music, Kani, this album, in the website of RFE, so RFE.com, music.com, and it was the very first album in Asia in RFE for music.
That's so awesome.
Thank you, Fat Cat.
Yeah, Fat Dashcat.co.uk to get the album, to get more stuff. This is pretty awesome. From Nigeria to Brooklyn, all around the world. Music.
Yes.
That's why music's so awesome.
Yeah,
right?
Also, yeah.
Man. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Really special for you coming in. We really appreciate it. We're going to play a little song. And then Phil, our buddy Phil from Momo, is going to come and talk about his new sandwich shop. This is one of my favorite tracks. It's You Can't Hide, Shame on You. Reggie Watts, LCD Sound System, live on Snacky Tunes. hard stop. Hard stop from the live show. Reggie Watts, ex Snacky Tunes. You can go search his episode.
That's a great choice.
Oh man, I love Reggie
Good
Watts.
Follow up to the global sounds.
Yeah, you know, a little funk. We want to welcome back to the show our one of our favorite friends, Phil.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This time talking about the long-awaited sandwich shop. Hi, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think you've been teasing for
20 months.
Mm-hmm. And I went there on Friday night, and it was delicious. I went in. It was a.
You got in there before I did. I see.
It was an audible. It was
hustler over here.
Hustler. I realized I had the right 30 minutes to have a sandwich. I wasn't even hungry. I'd already had dinner, but I was like, I'm going to go there and eat anyway.
Yeah, it's right on the Jefferson L train.
It's
so
literally right on top of it.
Oh, like, wow.
Like you walk off of the stairs and you can touch the front door.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to be the door toucher.
Awesome.
Yeah. That scene in Seinfeld, you know, that episode where you can like run out and get the gyro and then get back on the subway
without the doors closing?
I was like, I wonder what the timing could be. Like if you could get off of the Jefferson, get the sandwich, and get right back on the train.
Well, you could call first.
Yeah, that's a service you should offer, actually.
Oh, my God. That is.
Yeah. Yeah, so we just opened for the first 3 days, and it was we were surprised but not surprised because obviously we saw a lot of friends. But I would say about 60% of the people that came through the doors we'd never seen before. So it's just like
awesome.
Much foot traffic there. That's
a
great location.
And also so much, I'm sure so many destination people too because you have such a great reputation at Momo.
No, well, that's the thing. We didn't really put the word out though.
So
we just did like, you know, a few little tiny, you know, reach out to a few people. So cool.
You know, there's a sandwich shop literally on every corner and every bodega in New York. What made you want to open up a sandwich joint?
All the shitty sandwich shops in New York.
So every sandwich shop on every corner was the exact reason why you wanted to open one.
I think people really like sandwiches. And I won't name any names, but after we came up with the sandwich shop idea, we started doing research and going to, like, you know, the famous ones. And, of course, like the old school Italian ones we love. But, like, all the newer school ones, didn't like eating any of them.
What makes a great sandwich?
I think the thing that surprises me is that what makes a bad sandwich is people either don't use enough salt, enough spice, or enough acid.
Huh.
Like every single time I got a sandwich, it's supposed to be, you know, this great $15 sandwich. It was either not spicy enough, not salty enough, or not enough acid. So I think, I guess, like a balance.
Yeah, and there's architecture, too, to a good sandwich, right? Mm-hmm. Like you want to get the right balance, bread to filling to... You want
crunch.
Right, exactly. Texture.
You want fatty, but not, you know, too fatty, you know?
Yeah. I think that was one of the things when you told me, when I got really excited, is when you started mentioning, like, acid and lemon and things like that, like, on a sandwich. And I went, yeah, I guess I've never had that flavor profile.
Well, sometimes they put vinegar on, but then they put too much vinegar or not enough vinegar.
But I don't like vinegar on my sandwich.
Right. I do. I'm
even balsamic? Like a vinaigrette?
It's fine, but usually when I, you know, it's not, it's like that very cheap vinegar.
Yeah.
Like a couple dashes.
It's interesting, though, because you saying, well, I never really thought about that. It's like, it's actually exactly your point, right? That people give sandwiches a wider berth to be kind of imbalanced or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but
it's just a sandwich.
I mean.
But you say you don't like vinegar, but what about like pickled onions or pickles or, you know, that's vinegar.
That's fine.
But to me, that's vinegar too, though, you know.
When I think acid. No. When I think of vinegar on like the normal sandwich, it's like in that clear white bottle. They do like a couple shakes on it, and it's just like it's because it's not balanced. It's just like it's such a. I was like, two dashes is not going to hit this like 3 pound sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's the other thing too. A lot of the sandwiches in New York is that sometimes like if I give you half the money, can you take half the fillings out and make it better balanced?
Yeah,
and your sandwiches are like you get everything in one bite.
Yeah. Some of the breads, you know, we did some menu tests and, you know, some of the breads were, you know, taking the filling out, you know, like picking out the inside of the bread and then other breads, we actually got breads that have more bread in them, you know, so.
Do you do your own bread? Where do you get your bread from?
The original plan was that we were going to do a bakery in the basement and that kind of like, it took so long that we kind of abandoned it. Doing a bakery is a really
whole separate
undertaking.
Huge
so,
thing.
You know, so we have a, you know, we have a 40 quart Hobart mixer just sitting in the basement unplugged. So, you know, so that's, you know, the thing about the bread is.
Is that your Craigslist posting right there?
No, yeah, probably it will be tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, the idea for the sandwiches was, you know, I wanted to use the best bread. And then I started going, again, I won't name any names, but, you know, I started going to all these artisanal bread places. And then I found that for what makes a good sandwich for me is actually what's in the fillings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so some of these breads that I was trying for the sandwiches are great bread, but I prefer to just eat them by themselves.
Right. Right.
But not you know, they're such masterpieces of bread that you don't want to put stuff in it because it actually makes the sandwich somewhat too complex. So I actually
distracting.
I ended up going with a Northside Bakery.
They're great.
Man, and I got to tour their facility. It's so old school. It's so awesome, man. They've been doing it forever. So
how much bread have you eaten in the last 20 months?
Hold on. Let me see my phone. I've eaten 85,000 pieces of... No, I'm just kidding.
I'm so gullible.
So we're making... It's these things called jokes?
No, but see, you're usually the one that doesn't get the jokes. And now
I actually stole that one from Reggie Watts, your friend.
Oh yeah. Why don't we just talk about this after the show, Drita?
Okay, we'll bring it. We'll talk to the guys.
I mean, you know, so going into this and your recipe testing, you know, sandwiches are a very personal thing, and everyone in their life has probably made a sandwich.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you can't even really say that about pizza or even hamburger sometimes, but like everyone has slapped together something. So when in testing this, what sort of feedback or thought to go into it? Like when people would hear what you were doing, they're like, I got a sandwich for you.
Oh,
and you're just like, oh, brother. It's like, no, you get white bread, you get honey, you get ham, you know, you put some potato chips on there, boom, you got a sandwich.
Well, oddly enough, the sandwich menu, as you know, is like very small right now. It's basically four sandwiches, a hot dog, and then two like kind of like tapas style toasts.
Yeah, you have a tortilla espanol in there, which is amazing.
Yeah, root vegetable. But actually, one of the sets, so all the sandwiches are very personal to me, and each of them have kind of their own story and their own evolution. But the roast beef sandwich actually is pretty much, I definitely have tweaked it out, but it's my friend Mark Hurst, who's a friend of mine who makes his own kimchi. And we were talking about sandwiches, and he told me, like, you know, like 500 other thousand people told me, like, I have this sandwich, but I tried it and it was amazing. So
what's the sandwich?
Well, the one we tried was, we just got like, you know, just deli ingredients, you know, from, you know, Brooklyn Natural, but you know, roast beef, goat cheese and kimchi.
Huh. Oh, that's the one that I had.
Yeah. And so
that was awesome.
So I just took what, you know, the sandwich I tried, which is amazing, but using like not great versions of each of those individual things. And got some really amazing goat cheese from Dairyland. I'm doing roast tenderloin and doing it super rare. And then Mark makes his own kimchi. And then I added to the mix, I'm doing like a little bit of raw cucumber for a little crunch. And then horseradish and lemon zest. And
sounds
then olive oil and lemon juice. And and it's phenomenal. Oh. So I'm not above putting anybody's sandwich on the menu. But it just happens that everybody tells me their sandwich sucks.
Wait, can you tell me one of the worst sandwich ideas that you heard?
I can't even remember. Yeah, okay. They just kind of go in one out.
Well, I think Darren makes that good point, though, that so everybody's – it's a reference point that everybody has, right? So you have to kind of simultaneously, like, scratch the itch for people. Like, it's very nostalgic. It's very personal. But also you want to kind of push it into new territory, which it sounds like, you know, combining roast beef with kimchi and all these other, you know, tart
Yeah, because what you don't want to do is, like, you know, you find these sandwich shops that their only novel approach is – the best ingredients.
Yeah.
But it's still just, you know, it's like a ham sandwich. Yeah. Like, oh, we made the ham ourselves and we bake the bread and we make our own mayo, but it's just not, it's nothing new.
And then something is almost lost too.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain spirit that's lost of simplicity.
So let's go back to the 20 months and why it took so long to open. Because it's not like you haven't done it before and your partners, you know, you got Chance and you got Kip. I mean, those guys have been doing, you know, Chance does MoMo with you and Kip's been at Roberta's 5 years. So you have the know-how. And it's not a giant place either.
Yeah, you know the thing is that, like, New York City and it doesn't even have to be necessarily restaurants, although restaurants are very specific with the plumbing and the electric and all that stuff. It's just such a – every year there's – it gets more complex. It's a maze. And like the thing is that there's so many laws and regulations in New York, rightly so, you know, how many fires have we had recently, you know, and there's so many people doing really, you know, shitty illegal stuff with building stuff that they have to pass these laws. They have to do these codes. They have to do all these inspections. But what's happened is it's like this giant maze where you literally could hire two people that are the best at what they do and they do the same exact job and you can have them come in and they will tell you absolutely the exact opposite contradicting things, which we have had happen. And the funny thing is that it's so complex. It's like the Constitution or the law. It's like it's everybody's interpretation. And right. So you have one inspector says one thing, and some, you know, so it's like this really like this maze. And, you know, and then yeah. there's a liquor license. And also everybody that space, there's been so many bars and restaurants there. And it's just like everybody passed the buck. Because it was kind of like, you know, super desolate and ghetto out there yeah. 10 years ago and 20 years ago and 30 years ago. So people could get away with stuff. So when we come around and now it's like the hot spot in New York to open up a restaurant bar.
Yeah.
It's like it's under a magnifying glass now. So right. so then like we kind of just basically had to, you know, buck up and pay for everybody mm-hmm. else's laziness and illegal behavior.
Yeah.
How do you keep that endurance up, though? I mean, like over 20 months, that's a long time. How do you
methamphetamine.
Is that
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. I've been a meth addict for the last 20 months.
A lot of crank and yes. tantra.
Yeah. Oh, and espresso.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I mean, but it is, you know, you have to kind of, you know, once you're in it, you're in it 12 months, you're like, you're yeah. in it. So this is happening. How do you kind of, you know, keep the energy of how do you keep this sort of excitement? How do you keep yourself from kind of turning on a project that takes so much out of you?
Well, I mean, turning on it was not an option because, yeah. you know, basically, you know, financially all in.
Yeah.
Emotionally totally. All in. Like yeah. everything all in. So it's like a kind of a thing of like, you know, you get swept up and then, you know, in the ocean yeah. and then all of a sudden you're 5 miles offshore and then you swim 2.5 miles. You can't just right. stop swimming, you right. know.
And so. Even when you get swept back out on the mile, it's just like, yeah. what am I going to do? Not. It's like, oh, I got to go now. Yeah, 3.5 miles
keep on,
again.
Yeah, you just got to keep on going, you know.
Right.
And the build out, you guys did it yourselves?
Uh huh. The specific stuff, we had, you know, really amazing people do it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We're going to play some Built to Spill, and then we're going to come back, and we'll talk about some of these sandwiches.
Yes.
And sort of the inspiration, because I know that you pulled from your friends, but I think you also pulled from your family as well,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, in my own brain as well.
Your own brain, which yeah. is one of the most amazing brains.
You don't want to be in here.
No. all right, this is a song that I love. It's Car by Built to Spill here aww. On Snacking Tunes.
You get the car, I'll get the night. Off, you'll get the chance to take the world apart and figure out how it works. Don't let me know what you find out. I need a car, you need a guide, you need a map. If I don't die or worse, I'm gonna need a nap. At best, I'll be asleep when you get back. I wanna see it when you find out what comets, stars, and moons are all about. I wanna see them faces turn to backs and heads and slowly get smaller. I wanna see it now. I wanna see.
I mean, I could listen to Built to Spill all day. and if we're not careful, we might just. Phil from yes. Momo. Hi, hello.
Hi, hello.
The Sierra Massioni of Bushwick, who you've been referred to by many people.
I don't know how to say that. You know, I don't know how to respond to that, but, you know.
Just
thank
say
you.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank
say
you so
thank
much.
You.
You say grazie.
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 Grazie. So the new restaurant, Hi Hello, opened up this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I can already see lines for brunch there forming in my mind.
Yeah, we're gearing up for brunch. That's a whole other bridge that we're going to pass. But, yeah, I'm excited about that.
Now, I know Jordana hates brunch.
Jordana has some issues.
With brunch.
With brunch, if
but
she's honest.
That being said, I feel like you could get behind a Phil brunch.
Well, so, okay, you know.
actually, will you go on a journey with me? Actually, have you been to...
Do we have enough time for you to talk about... I don't think we have enough time for you to talk about brunch.
I'm not going to give a whole brunch talk. I'm just saying it's the brunch food. So if you're sort of keeping it, if you're doing the same menu mm-hmm. that you do all the time and there's no, like, basic girls there that are talking about how, you know, fucked up they got last night, then... Right. And I don't have to wait online, then, you know, yeah, I can...
Have you been to either Sweden, Denmark, or Iceland?
Yes.
Have you, Jordana?
Sweden.
Sweden.
Yeah.
We're thinking about doing a straight up continental.
Really? Like, oh my God.
Like, but like the Swedish, you know, you have the brown bread, you got the salmon, you got the this, you
the
got
egg, the
ham. A couple cereals, the ham, the this, the that, and cheese and bread. And that's it.
Yeah.
Smorgasbord.
Yeah.
Yaman. I'm in for that. Yeah.
Did you say Yaman?
Yaman.
And also maybe like you know, like Swedish brunch, but then also with Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, I can definitely go down there. It really has to. I just don't like. I don't like the lines and all the people being annoying. And I don't like bottomless mimosas or anything like that. That's not my style.
I guess that's illegal now. Hey.
I think that they give it away. I think that's actually how they get around it. Is that they it's give it's.
Oh
given,
really?
I think something like that. Some loophole.
Add into the bottomless. I guess consumption laws, right?
Yeah.
Man, mm-hmm. this city.
This city.
The sandwiches, which are sort of the center of the menu.
Yes.
One came from your friend to the kimchi.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some of the other ones. What's the one that you are just
the sleeper?
Yeah, let's talk about the sleeper, but then also the one where you're going, this is the sandwich that, you know, if one of you doesn't order it, you sort of fucked up. You came all the way out to Bushwick and you messed up.
Well, it's funny because I actually worked at a Jamaican restaurant in Atlanta.
Yaman.
Obviously. I worked at a Jamaican restaurant in the late 90s in Atlanta, and I used to go behind. I was actually just a waiter and a bartender there, and I, you know, when it was slow, I'd go behind the you know, in the kitchen. They'd like let me make a sandwich, and basically it was a grilled jerk chicken breast, marinated for a couple days, a pineapple brioche, a chipotle mayonnaise, a pepper relish, and then what I would do, and then pineapple brioche, and then I put. Lettuce, onion, and cheddar cheese on it.
Pineapple brioche.
Yeah, pineapple brioche.
What does that mean?
It's a brioche with pineapple in it.
I don't know. Well, thank you for clarifying.
No, wow.
They called it brioche. Like, you know, we're in New York City now, so when you think of brioche, it's like this big fancy thing. But I actually went back in my, because I couldn't really find pineapple brioche, and to make some, you know, to have somebody make it for you would be really expensive. So I remember the texture, and it was literally almost the texture of like Martin's potato rolls.
Sure.
Okay. So it's basically like Martin's potato rolls.
So godly texture.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I've joked around for like years about that I want to open up a restaurant and only serve that sandwich because I believe it's the best sandwich I've ever had back then. We put it on the menu and people have responded very positively to it.
So what's
where's the pineapple now?
Oh, so there's no pineapple anymore. But the pineapple brioche it was a thing that they would serve with like a mango butter on the side, and then mm-hmm. you just heat it up and then you just put mango butter. So it's really the pineapple is lost in the sandwich. So the pineapple's not important.
Didn't even play.
No.
Huh.
But it just sounded cool.
So that's the number one stunner.
I think, and you know, we have it priced really right. It's like $9 and it comes with a side. So, you know, like fries or the Spanish tortilla or super salad. So I think that's kind of the sleeper. It's and it's unpretentious too. It's like, it's fun, you know, it's accessible.
That's one of the things I've always thought about your food. I mean, you have essentially you've become like the punk rock sushi place of New York, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Like it's fun. It's not. And look, I get, and this is not me because I also love the whole other side of sushi where it's very like ceremonial, very clean, very like whispery. But every once in a while, like, you know, when the last time I was there, like on Saturday, you threw that giant bottle of sake on the table, and you're like, here's some fish. Like, I'm like, yeah, let's get after it. Like, let's have a good time.
Well, you know, the thing with Momo is that, you know, I do take my job seriously, and I take my restaurant seriously. But, like, we get people in here, like, you know, being like, well, I eat at Masa, and I eat at Yasuda, and, oh, I used to live in Japan, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, well, I own a 800-square-foot restaurant across the street from the international headquarters of Boar's Head Meat.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want from me? Like, you know, I'm obviously winging it. I'm not, like, you know, I'm not walking.
You're more like, come on, winging it.
Well, no, but winging it in the sense of, like, you know, trying to balance, like, you know, I'm not a one-trick pony. Like, I'm not obsessed with only Japanese things. I'm obsessed with life and you know, and people are calling me out because, like, you know, so I'm just like, you know. Like, I take it.
Yeah. I wish there was a one-star review of Momo on Yelp that was like,
yeah, that's what they all say.
That's what they all say.
I will say, on the Yelp topic, though, my bad reviews read like dreams, because my favorite one is, like, some guy gave us, like, one star, two stars. He's like, well, you know, the fish is really fresh, but it's really overpriced, and it's out of the way, but I'm kind of spoiled because I live on St. Mark's, and I go to the buy one get one free places. Right. I'm like, if I read that review, I'm like, oh my god, I'm eating there tonight. You know? Yeah.
The worst reviews on Yelp are always the ones like, there's something else going on.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it's actually like quite a pleasure to kind of try and divine what was going on in that person's life. That zero stars, and I got dumped at the same time.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like, it's really, it's poetry.
I actually did an investigation of a guy that gave me like one or two stars. And then I started reading his under the reviews. He gave the Brooklyn Bridge 3 stars. Like, the actual
bridge?
The actual Brooklyn Bridge. He's like, it's cool. I walked over it. It's, you know, it's kind of cool. It's nice. He gave the Brooklyn Bridge 3 stars.
He gives a sunny day 2.5.
Yeah, oh, built this bill. Like, I would give it 2.5, but I guess I'll just give it 3.
If I could give 3/4, but yeah. Whatever. It's got some history to it. So the place is awesome. You guys also have a really fantastic cocktail program as well.
Yeah. We have Gavin that was formerly of Roberta's, also just killing the drinks.
Dude, that Roberta's family just spreading everywhere.
Prosecco on tap.
Whoa,
really?
Yeah.
Who's
Do
where?
You ever just set up underneath it with your mouth open?
Yeah, exactly.
Homer Simpson style.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Mom, don't listen to that last part.
Shh. Earmuffs.
Earmuffs. So you get Prosecco on tap. I don't think I've ever heard of Prosecco.
Yeah.
I don't know. Wine on tap is tricky sometimes.
You know what, though?
Unless you have one of those, like, insane, like, multi-million-dollar systems.
Yeah.
You don't need a multi-million-dollar system. What you need is clean lines. And the whole thing about it is that, you know, okay, you buy some, like, you know, $500 Barolo, by all means, put it in your wine chiller and, you know, keep the cork nice and tight and, you know, save it. But if you're going to drink wine in 6 months from now, I promise you that it being in a stainless steel keg or being in a bottle, it's going to taste exactly the same.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I mean, it's a nice, really what it is like you're passing on to the consumer. It's less expensive.
And yeah, it's less expensive.
It's a nice perk.
You're going to be running through kegs of Prosecco during that brunch, man. I'll tell you what.
Bottomless.
Yeah. Bottomless. That'd be really funny if you had regulars who could have their own, like, Prosecco keg.
Oh, yeah, right.
Instead of, like, a bottle of whiskey.
I'm just not a bottomless girl, you know? Like, I've got a bottom.
Hey-o.
Are you a bottomless girl,
Dan? I mean, I'm, like, a top type of girl.
Ooh.
So, you know, the Jefferson scene is big out there. Do you feel that you are, like, the pioneer, or you are, like, the second wave? Like, who can you shout out for the people who sort of planted the flag?
Well, I mean, I moved to Willoughby and Wilson in 99. So
right.
There's that.
Any changes in the last decade?
Well, there's less machine guns and less helicopters flying overhead. That's
a
true story.
Machine guns, really?
Yeah. You know, over the years, I've lived in some bad neighborhoods, and I thought I had heard a machine gun before. And then when I moved to Bushwick in 99, I'm like, 2000, I was like, that's a machine gun. Yeah, when you hear
I mean, I need more details here.
The corner, like where Maria Hernandez Park and the Jefferson stop, that was considered the worst neighborhood in the United States in 2001.
I hear that, but at the same time, it's like a machine gun. I mean, systematic killing, and that's a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, it was so bad that a handgun couldn't.
Well, if you got a handgun,
that's for like, well, if you're going to kill one people's.
One people's.
Yeah, if you're going to kill one people's, one handgun. Yeah. Lots of people's, lots of humans.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a lot for me to understand. I live in I live in Cobble Hill.
You've heard some stories today, Jordana. You're gonna need.
I know.
You're gonna need like some moment with a whiskey after today.
If you hear a machine gun in Cobble Hill, it's because the next door neighbor's kid has like some $10,000 speakers for his video game.
Yeah.
So wait. So who else? Who are your comrades out there?
Come on, Betsy at Pearls. I think Pearls is probably my favorite bar of the last 10 years in New York City, maybe the world. Montana's, obviously.
Oh, shout out
to Montana.
He's doing such great stuff out there.
I love him so much.
And he built that place by hand. He and his dad built it. I think that also took about 2 years
to build. That took about 2 years, yeah.
Yeah. Have you been there? They're doing, like, Appalachian food?
Mm-hmm, yeah. You know, I haven't been there.
So then, since you haven't been there, you can make no judgments, correct?
I'm not making a judgment. I think that the review, Joshua David Stein's review of the place was very interesting to me. I think, having nothing to do specifically with him, I haven't tasted his food, but I do think that he brought up some very interesting ideas.
I urge you both to go on Montana's Facebook page and Montana the Man and also Montana's Trail House. I wrote a scathing response to that. And yeah. I'm not Mr. like, you know, get involved in people's business, but it pissed me off so bad.
Can you just give the listeners insight into this review?
So Joshua David Stein is a critic who reviewed Montana's Trail House is what it's called, right? So, and they're doing Appalachian cuisine, and he took issue with this idea that as, you know, hip food has sort of embraced rustica in such a profound way that now it's not enough to just be sort of like rustic and farm to table with like a reclaimed wood kitchen table. Now it's like we've actually started to move into the cuisine of one of the poorest regions in the world. Certainly in the country, and kind of reclaiming that cuisine. And is there a problem?
Yeah. But one of the points I make is that, like, but what about the pok guy? I've been to Thailand. Thailand is impoverished in some areas, and you know he's doing like really authentic, not Bangkok, but the countryside. Well, guess what? They're super poor in the countryside, so it's okay if he goes to Thailand and hangs out with poor people and steals their recipes and come over and he's celebrated. And like so by the same side of the token, this is American cuisine and it's hundreds of years old. And why not celebrate that? And why not explore that? Because no one else is doing it. It's so original in concept that this guy is like shitting on somebody else's dream. So fuck him.
I mean,
a million times.
I agree. I totally agree. I think that a lot of the food that we love to eat in this country is absolutely the cuisine of poverty.
What is his name?
Oh my God.
What's his name again?
Well, Joshua David Stein is his name.
Please eat at Momo Sushi Shack.
But he's also. But I mean, listen. You know, I don't disagree.
Be here in like half an hour. He's got the next show.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He does. You're right.
He's a nice guy.
I don't disagree with you. And I actually think there are a few other instances in which similar arguments were made in his column space, like for Birds and Bubbles. I don't know if you read that one as well, but it touched on some similar sort of provocative ideas. And I don't disagree. But I also, you know, as a writer, I don't think that any questions are off limits to ask.
Absolutely.
Look, the issue that I have with that, the Appalachian thing, is that like, but the issue I have is that the whole like offal movement of chefs, which has been so like now standard, came from the poorest people eating the poorest cuts.
Right, which is Phil's point as well.
Which is Phil's point as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like that to me is not so much a commentary on like people finding poor culture food. It's just someone having a problem with hipsters in Brooklyn.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean that's what it is, because like, you know, if you want to go to anybody who's ever done bone marrow or liver or tripe or...
Well, what we're talking about is, it comes down to a question of appropriation. Where does it, you know, where is there a line? How is it okay? You know, is it not okay? That's what we're talking about. I think that's the bigger question that he wanted to ask, whether or not he did it effectively or if it was a worthy target, you know, I think is up for debate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the issues I have, and this is part of review culture, is that it's tough to put anything, any point of view outside of what the restaurant you're dealing with, because reviews like that hold so much weight now.
Sure.
That it's like, I totally think that's a valid point. You can absolutely make that, cite that as an example. But to make that someone's review and hang it there is really unfair.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's like, as a writer, when you sit down, reviews, I don't really write reviews anymore. I used to. But, you know, you'd sit down, you're trying to make some grand point. You know, you're trying to use the restaurant as an opportunity to tell a story. And I agree, it's problematic because we can't judge restaurants based on what we want them to be or what story we want them to tell. We need to judge them based on what they are and what they're trying to be. And I think that that message gets muddled sometimes.
And so what's the message of hi, hello?
What's that?
What's the message of hi, hello?
Love.
Yeah?
That's it.
Love in between two slices of bread?
Yeah. I want really, really quickly, yeah, side note. What if it was an African-American couple that opened up in Montana's Trail House, and they were doing, like, soul food, mm-hmm, or Creole food, would he also use that same logic?
Well, he
would not.
Right. I mean,
I think he did.
That's sort of the other review. I think you should read it, which, and I cannot answer for Josh. Obviously I'm not him, but, you know, in the Birds and Bubbles review, the woman who opened that restaurant, Sarah
who's
Simmons,
the nicest and most lovely woman,
is a lovely woman. And, she's from North Carolina, I believe, right? She's in North Carolina. She's from the South, and she opened a fried chicken restaurant. And the sort of take of the review was that she didn't have maybe a claim to that food because she is white, which to your point, I mean, is really absurd. I mean, she grew up in the region.
I own a Japanese restaurant. Like, is like every like French restaurant.
Are you not Japanese?
No, I'm not Japanese.
Oh, well, I thought you were
name a chef that cooks a cuisine and they're actually from that place. That's like one in a thousand. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, how many French chefs are actually French?
Yeah.
You know?
And listen, that's where the interesting stuff happens, too. I mean, when many of the cuisines that people are obsessed with, like Mexican food is a great example, or even some Japanese
Rick
cuisine.
Rick Bayless, man.
Or Alex Trebek. Yeah. I mean, there are examples of indigenous fusion, even in their most natural form. So, yeah, you know, we think about ramen as, you know, a distinctly Japanese dish, but it actually came from Chinatown in Japan. It was, in fact, the original name for ramen was Hiyashi Chuka, which is just Chinese noodle. And so there is always room for cuisines to evolve and grow, and in the hands of the patriots or the hands of somebody else. So
actually, Chance and I were messing around with doing a taco place a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
and we were thinking about making it, like, you know, everybody's like, this is the most authentic Mexican taco, and I was just thinking, like, I've been to Mexico a couple times, and when I've gotten authentic tacos, there has not been, like, you know, organic watermelon radish on it, you know, and the meat has not been so tender.
Yeah.
So we thought about doing, like, you know, like almost what people would perceive as the worst taco in New York, but making it the most authentic. You know,
what if you just opened a taco place that was called Authentic as Fuck?
Authentico as Fuck.
Oh my God,
I'm there.
Well, if there was one guy who could open up, who could put fuck in the name of his restaurant and make it work, would be you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'd come for brunch even.
Yeah. Well, Phil, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
There's no website yet, right?
There's no website. I want to say a shout out to my co-host Alexis on the main course. I have a radio show here. I'm actually normally here at noon.
Oh. So, all right, we'll come by. But yeah, and then so people, it's literally just get off the Jefferson stop.
Yeah,
right there.
It's right on the corner of Wyckoff and Star. It's 247 Star Street.
It's awesome.
We're going to be closed for lunch and brunch for the month of April. Closed on Monday, but we're basically open from 5 to 2. Food until probably 11 o'clock. Midnight,
yeah, it's a nice bar scene.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thank you, Jordana, for co-hosting.
Yay. Had a great time. Thank you.
Thank you to Tall National.
Hi, brother Greg.
Shout out to Greg.
Yo, Greg.
Shout out to Mom and Dad. Shout out to Anna.
Oh, shout out to Daniel.
Shout out to Daniel.
Shout out to Jordan, my girlfriend.
Yeah. Shout out to Joe, my beagle.
Shout out to Mingus.
Hi, Joel.
Birdie, our cats.
We'll be running around Coachella the next few weeks. You don't know what I look like because I'm on the radio. So just listen to this voice and someone who seems like he has half an idea of what he's talking about.
See you there.
Do you need a bartender for personal bartender chef for Coachella?
I'm
for hire.
Yeah, I'm going to put it in my rider for work that I need a personal chef and bartender. So thank you so much. Check out Hi Hello. It's really awesome. Go with friends so you can eat all the sandwiches. We're going to end on a really nice note. This is Telepop Music, Breathe, on Snacky Tunes. We'll see you in a few weeks.
I brought you something close to me. Left with something new. See through your head. You haunt my dreams. There's nothing to do but believe. Just believe. Just breathe.
I'm used to it by now. Just breathe.
This program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.